Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian. This is Austin Chadwick, and here we are joined by Tim Ottinger, and we're going to talk a little bit about mobbing and in terms of training, facilitating, and tips and tricks. So, Tim, you want to talk a little bit about yourself and what relationship you have to mob program?
Sure. So, I'm Tim Ottinger. I've been in software for a very long time. I checked the whiteness of the beard. 40 some odd years. And a while back, I got in touch with Woody Zuhl, and he and I got to work together a little bit. And he still, I think, does one of my exercises I invented to illustrate complexity and the amount of effort it is to work.
Nice.
I work with Industrial Logic. And part of my job is I go and I give workshops sometimes, and I work with teams to improve their processes. And quite often, the easiest way for me to do that teaching is in mob programming.
Awesome.
Right on. Very cool. Okay. So jumping right in.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about how those workshops go and how mobbing's a part of it.
Sure. So we've kind of, innovated. I don't know what the word is. Fell into, created. This thing called a real work workshop, because we realized that it was really hard for people to send their entire programming team off for some kind of training. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, maybe it's a little easier if we're doing real work at the time. So maybe it's like really intense coaching. So we'd bring people in and we would work in their actual code base at their actual location.
Nice.
So if you're going to have a lot of learning and do really, really fast, what's the best way to do that? Well, it's a programming mob, of course.
Okay.
And we found this to be true. So a real work workshop, we show up, do real work in a real code base, and use mob programming. And we let the team show us how they work. And as we learn from the code and the way people work, and we can say, oh, the thing that we could learn now is we should study primitive obsession so we can understand abstraction better. That's what we should work on for the next hour. And then we're at some point, it's like, oh, here's the problem I'm seeing is that some of you are doing cooperative overlap in your discussion and others are waiting their turn. If we can satisfy that, make some kind of a compromise, get an agreement going, we can improve the way we work.
Hmm.
And so we really teach, instead of teaching an agenda, we teach what it feels like the team needs to learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because when you're mob programming, you have a lot of visibility into what the day-to-day process is for any one person and how they might go about solving a problem. And that transparency allows somebody like a trainer or a coach to immediately kind of jump on the moment and take that opportunity to do something with that, right?
Yeah, and it can be very powerful. You mix together the developers and people who have been isolated testers working mm-hmm. post facto. You bring in the product owners, you bring in the chief finance officer, whoever you bring in the bosses to work with the teams, and there's a lot of new understanding comes out of that.
Nice.
Yeah, and what jumps out to me, and I was actually having a conversation with another mobber this morning about it, is it's kind of like applying the Agile Manifesto to training in the sense that you don't know what they need, and when you're there, you'll see what the next thing is to help with, right? Each person, each mob, each team's going to have different needs that they need to learn, and you don't know until you're there, right, with them, mobbing with them, So I think that's really cool way to do it. And we were actually talking about doing that internally because it's hard to predict in advance, oh, a new person's going to need this, and this training mm-hmm. or whatever. Where if you just start mobbing with them, you can see, you'll see what they're struggling with or see what their needs are, right?
Yeah.
So, right on.
It's a cool feedback loop. What we take, as we're doing the work, we keep track of what we're learning. We put up a poster that says, "Today I learned."
Mm-hmm.
And people put stickies up on. And I take photos at the end of each day. So we can say, oh, here are the things that we learned. Remind ourselves of what it is, right?
Yeah.
Now I've got those for dozens and dozens of real work workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel I'm closer to knowing, in general, what topics people needed last year.
Yeah. Chart the data over time. Time series analysis. I like it.
Yeah. Now that doesn't necessarily mean those are the same things people are going to need this year. But it's yesterday's weather is pretty good. I can plan on leaning into those topics a bit more.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then, of course, see what else comes up. See how different a team could be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have one question, then maybe we'll jump to the next topic. So how long have you been doing this style of coaching, and how is it different from the prior style of coaching you were doing?
So I used to do more for coaching, sitting with the teams, just joining the team for some period of weeks or months. And then, of course, you know, for training, we would teach specific topics. So you could come and we could teach TDD, we could teach refactoring skills, legacy code techniques in workshops. But for coaching, I would do it a similar way, but sitting within the team and sometimes, you know, pairing for all day if possible. And I'd see the similar kinds of things. But as you know, when you're working in a pair, you're seeing what this person struggles with, and then you're seeing what that person struggles with. And you're not really able to see what the whole overall, you know, team and environment needs the same way. And you also end up teaching the same topic 8 times. Which, by the way, Jeff Langer and I put out a piece of work through Pragmatic Programmers called Agile in a Flash.
Okay.
And there are a whole bunch of little cheat sheets, right? Mm-hmm. And so you take a look at the front of the card, and it has like a bullet list of 7 things or 8 things, whatever it is. It's a checklist or a cheat sheet. And the back, there's an article. And the reason that we had come up with that idea was because we kept teaching the same topics over and over. So we suddenly realized a lot of times you get smart people, you give them just enough.
Yep.
And some references to dig out, and they'll have pretty good mastery in a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
So in my prior way of working, the Agile and flashcards were very helpful because it was, you know, repeated lessons.
Yeah.
And with a new way of working, I don't repeat anything within a group, you know.
Yeah.
If one programmer learns it, they all learn it.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So I guess when you're doing these, What are the sizes of teams that you would do this with, and how do you kind of arrange the the number of people that are ingesting that training, because you say like you're not repeating it from group to group, so what are the sizes, like what's your biggest mob, what's the smallest that you do, how does that work out for you?
First, I don't repeat within a group. I may repeat from group to group. So.
Yeah. Okay.
So what I found is that if it's too small, if it's under 5 people, they probably won't hire me to come in and look because it's just market prices and reality.
Yeah.
I've also found that I have real trouble sustaining anything that's much over 10.
Okay.
So I tend to go maybe 15. I've done 20.
Okay.
But I have to make the cycles, your turn at the keyboard has to be very, very short.
Yeah.
So instead of being 15 minutes, we go to 7 minutes. If 7 minutes, it's still too long to get everybody in, you go to 5. 5 is too long, let's try to go to 3.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to keep everybody involved if you know that you won't be operating the keyboard for another, you know, hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that also that goes to the idea that the programming is 9/10 thinking, or 11/12 thinking. if it really is almost all thinking, then you're probably fine up to where you have like 12 people, maybe. You know, at some point, the transaction cost of stating intent and trading seats, you know, it's very, very small, but somewhere around where you have more brains than you technically need to do the thing you're doing now, where I think it starts to become harder to justify.
Mm-hmm.
So, excellent. You know, really, 7 to 10 is kind of a sweet spot.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. So you might be working on a real code base, having 7 people rotating through, or 7 or 8 people rotating through, and they have a 5-ish minute rotation, and you're in the actions being taken, you're giving coaching advice and focusing on specific areas as you go through. Is that right?
Yeah. Stop for these little lecture breaks.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Very good.
No, so you'll kind of ad hoc lecture as needed on a particular topic or
Well, you know, at this point in my career, an ad hoc lecture is really sort of an average of 17 other versions of the same lecture I've given.
Sounds good.
So yeah, you grab a whiteboard sheet and you draw a picture and you know the story already, you've done it a bunch of times, and you go through the exposition again, but with this particular group in mind, and tailor a little bit.
Nice. Awesome. Right on. Well, that's probably a good segue into how are the facilities and seating, how does that work out for you while you're doing this?
Well, for the workshop, real advantage is that they bring us all together in a room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes the rooms are really great, but when they're not great, it's one of two things. Either people can't rotate forward to get into the seat to drive, because there's a lot of, like, you know, really long rows and what have you, or the network's bad.
Yeah.
And when the network is bad, everything is bad.
Yeah.
We end up sitting around waiting to try to reconnect and then establish credentials again. Now we're back in the code base again. Okay, we got this. Let's commit. Oh, we can't. We've lost our connection. We have to re-log in again. And we take 5 minutes, and then we have to have the person who owns the machine log in again because they have a short timeout and the network's down. Now we have to do that 3 times. And sometimes we have remote members, and the remote people, you know, well, I haven't been able to see the board for the past 7 minutes.
Ooh,
I can't see the screen.
That's not good. How often does something like that happen?
The puck is my enemy.
Yeah.
Have you seen these? The little round, it looks like a hockey puck that's an omnidirectional speaker.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yes.
They're my enemy. They're great in a proper conference room setting, I suppose, if you're never having to be the remote one.
Yeah.
But hearing everything equally well in all directions, and in particular, any noises within 3 feet of the puck.
Yeah.
Because you're going to end up sitting next to the person who clicks their pen.
Nice.
And the person who shuffles their paper and clicks their pen are going to be much closer than the person you're trying to listen to.
So remote empathy is a really important feature of all this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Directional mics, you know, with good noise rejection. I have an Audio Technica, but I've also used some Blue Yetis that are very, very nice, and they make it all work better.
Yeah.
But that's a big thing for the classroom. Mm-hmm. The problem is that when people want to carry the mobbing out of the classroom and do it as a way of life, the facilities are almost never even remotely okay for it.
Yep.
You know, a lot of my teams want to do mobbing, but they can't because there isn't a place that you could put 7 chairs and a screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that was like a big thing when we were first getting started. We rearranged with facilities, and then we just had different iterations of it. But at the very beginning, we had a projector. Like we kind of checked out a projector with our IT group and had that up against a wall for a while. And after being in a conference room, because the conference room also, we had this issue where people were saying that their neck was hurting because they were constantly turning to one direction because the tables are all organized lengthwise, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I had a similar experience when we started mobbing at a previous organization. Was it wasn't like, oh, you want to do that? Great, we'll spend tons of money on you. So what we ended up doing is we got like a very cheap budget to buy, you know, cheap TVs from, you know, Costco, and we basically took junk that was in like the back of the facilities room, and we made a mobbing station because there are a few of us who were passionate about it out of almost nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So how do you help teams who want to do it but can't because of their facilities? How do you help move them along, I guess?
Well, I have worked with facilities in some organizations. One place, they were getting ready to move floors, and they're setting up the furniture, and so facilities talked to me. It was really neat. They decided that they were going to have, you know, 10, 15 teams on that floor. So they would set up 4 mobbing stations for when people want to mob.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, awesome.
So apparently the thought was that it would be an exceptional thing that you would only do under extreme circumstances.
Yeah.
There wasn't any awareness that it was a daily activity all day long.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yes, but I've tried to work with them. TVs on wheels,
mm-hmm.
big TVs on wheels, I have become a big fan of.
Yep.
But still, you know, if you can't move the furniture, if the facilities department owns the floor plan and rules with an iron fist, it's just a struggle. You end up having to do some pairing, rearrange your cubicles area as best you can. I don't think that organizations realize how much their well-thought-out, comfortable individual seating has destroyed their productivity over time.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that was one thing is when we were designing our new area, like one key thing that I wanted to make sure that we had was everything on wheels, including, you know, whiteboards, sound walls, tables, you know, nothing should be in place forever sort of thing. And, you know, we made that kind of argument up front, and it's gone very well. And the space has been rearranged multiple times, so that's been really good.
So one kind of follow-up for you, Chris, was I noticed in the original mobbing time lapses it talked about justifying the mob station. It was like, oh, this one mob station costs less than 4 cubicles or something that. So I guess you can make those kind of cases to try facilities, but I guess...
If a cubicle costs you $8,000, you're already, you know, doubling the cost of a mobbing station, potentially. So, there's definitely some, for 4 people to be in that one space, you're actually spending less money for the mobbing space than you are for the individual space to be there.
Yeah. Do you guys ever read up on Robert Probst?
Mm.
No.
So, Probst or Probst, is the problem of names you've seen spelled, but never heard spoken.
Absolutely.
He's the guy who invented... Okay, I'm going to say this. Everybody's going to think, long black mustache and top hat. He invented the cubicle.
All right.
He's not that villain. Okay.
Yeah.
He invented something that he called the action office, and his idea from the beginning was everything on wheels.
Nice.
So that the people who are doing the work can reconfigure their space according to the work they're doing.
Yeah.
So as you work, so shall you sit. All the walls, all the chairs, all the desks, bookcases, bookshelves, whiteboards, everything. Totally movable.
Mm. Wow, okay.
And that was the original idea for cubicles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It took off the wheels.
Got lost.
It did.
Somewhere along the line, people decided they needed bigger and bigger teams, but they couldn't afford new space. And so they realized by making fixed-size cubicles that are of a uniform nature that they could squeeze a lot more people per acre of floor space. And it became a big deal. And of course, you can't move those walls. They were controlled by facilities to make sure everybody has a uniform space, that it's fair, that everything is identical, that you have an even experience, that you get the maximum number of people without anybody being preferred and special. So suddenly all the walls are locked down, the chairs are movable, but the desks are locked.
Yeah.
And of course, every space is made perfectly so you can stick the corner full of computer. You take your computer, you stand it in the corner.
Yeah.
And that way you have your mouse and keyboard, and anyone else who wants to talk to you has to walk up behind you.
Yes.
And now there's no pairing, there's no mobbing, there's no way to do those things. This wonderful space that they tried to build to make it efficient and uniform is exactly the wrong thing.
Yep. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, right on.
You want to move to the next topic, mobbing tips and tricks? Is that all right?
Sure. Oh, by the way, if you want to, I have an article on Probst. I can throw it to you. You can throw it into the show notes if you want.
Absolutely. We should definitely do that.
Yeah. That and the other show notes, please send them and we'll include them for sure. So.
Sure. Okay. Good. Maybe it's people like that.
All right, so mobbing tips and tricks. So you've obviously been able to mob with multiple groups of people, and you've been able to see patterns. So what patterns and anti-patterns have you seen that you want to communicate out to everybody?
Okay, well, remember, a lot of times when we do this, I start in a workshop environment, and for most of the people, it's the first time they've ever seen mob programming.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things that we do that work particularly well in that situation that maybe people such as yourself would find less useful. So with that grain of salt, we'll give you some of those.
Yeah.
Nice.
So one of the ideas was that we realized there's something called promise debt.
Mm.
So promise debt is when I'm trying to work through a problem right now and I realize I'm not sure that other function is right. It might not be thread safe, and we should check to see if the function call is thread safe, but right now we're doing this other thing, and I want to get to green, right? So you're in this situation where these other things that are peripheral concerns pop up, and what people will tend to do is either decide not to deal with it or try to remember it later when they're 7 steps down the road. So we decide to call that promise debt. This is a thing that I promised to do, but I'm not going to do it right now. I'm going to keep my time for what I'm doing now. So we'll put it on a board and we'll stick the stickies up and say, here are the things that we need to do before this is really done.
Mm-hmm.
Now what we're doing is paying down our promise debt. So if you track it and you pay it down, I found that's very successful with people who, like myself, may not have the long-term memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So paying down promise debt is key. Another one is the idea of arguing in code.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you've probably heard this one before, but you know that you can argue interminably in abstract.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So we could go for hours and hours about why readability is more important than performance. No, performance is more important than readability. Oh, but wait, readability is better with long functions. No, it's better with short functions. Right? A long name is better. Well, no, a much shorter name is better. And in abstract, you can't resolve that. It's not abstract solvable. So what we do is we go to code. And if you can show your idea in code, then it's no longer abstract, and it has context and constraints, and it makes sense. So we go maybe 10 minutes of abstract argument, if we're feeling generous.
Yeah.
And then we go straight to code.
Yeah.
Because if we can express it, we should express it.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely,
that's
yeah.
Number two tip.
Yeah,
so far both of those we use often.
Yeah.
We didn't call it promise debt before, but we have similar ways to track those promises.
Yeah.
Those promises.
Respect the Kanban and...
Yeah.
Let's write, you know, there's always this common phrase, let's write a card for that and get it up on some physically tracked thing. And then it's, you know, yeah, so it's pretty good. And also flipping a coin to argue if the argument goes even farther than the code.
Yeah.
Yeah, we pulled up one day, we had some small routine and it was just an algorithm.
Yeah.
And the person who wrote it, everybody in the room was like, oh, that's not very readable. And he said, well, it's straightforward. And then somebody said, oh, no, this one's more readable. And so we broke up. Everybody wrote an implementation. We put them up side by side.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it turns out that it wasn't mine that was chosen. I thought that I really had this one. It wasn't mine. It was somebody else's, which I admitted was better than mine.
Nice.
So I
fantastic.
Think that sometimes, you know, how you phrase it, how you decompose it, how you express it, you really have to see it.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen the side-by-side resolve several debates. You put them side-by-side, and yep, it really resolves those, yeah.
And cool. Of course, having, you know, a coin or a dice or something is probably
if all else fails.
Of course, the rotations, is you guys know this one already, you rotate faster with more people, keep it moving, keep it lively, so.
Nice.
The Today I Learned chart is one of ours.
I like that a lot. Yeah,
I like that a lot too. Yeah.
And I think it's important because when people say, well, what's the, you know, what is the value? Well, I'll just ask you, what is the value of mobbing? Why would people do this?
Yeah.
Quality and discussion and all that, you know, all that stuff, right?
All the knowledge sharing. Everybody learns how to do things. We learn how to do things. We find better ways. Well, what if you don't track those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For
like
most companies, it won't matter, but for mine, I'm getting paid to teach.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the value produced over the course of the coaching session in the form of people saying, these are my aha moments, right?
Yeah. And I start to imagine, like, if you took a picture of that every day, you could do, like,
yeah,
some sort of like slideshow or transition where just like...
They have those dynamic word clouds, right?
Yeah.
Words grow and shrink depending on their over time. It's kind of cool. Yeah, might be valuable there.
Yeah.
Ooh, you just came up with a product idea.
There you go.
I have the photos, but I don't have the word cloud.
Yeah.
Probably the other one is again, people are doing this for the first time, and they're usually coming in scared and nervous because there's some stranger programming with them in their code.
Yeah.
Fear of judgment. And also they get really, you know, pent up and excited about it. So the other one is we do discipline breaks.
Mm.
So 10 minutes to the hour. There are rules. You have to stop working.
Yeah.
you can't work through the break. If you do anything that's work-related during the break, it needs to be something very non-similar. I have the rule of you should spend at least a minute vertical. And of course, I adjust that based on ability, you know,
everybody
is equally
makes sense.
Ambulatorily capable. So if you can't get up and get vertical, then at least move around.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea is that you can't just stay there.
Increase your heart rate somehow.
get up, change your focal length, change, you know, take care of yourself for 10 minutes. And part of that is get out of the room. And this is a training thing. Because when you have 10 or 15 people in a room, the temperature goes way up, and so does the CO2 level.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So every hour we air out the room, so it's not miserable. Huh. And we find out that when we do this, people are now you know, usually at 10 o'clock in the morning, 10:30, people are draggy. And at 2:30 in the afternoon, people are draggy. And once we started doing discipline breaks every hour, that never happens. Now it's like, what do you mean it's 4:30? It can't be 4:30 yet.
Yeah.
How can it be 5? I still want to work on this. Who wants to stay on?
Yeah.
You're not used to having that energy. So we take breaks to remain fresh, not to recover from being tired.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You also know about the whole, you know, driver steers, Bob navigates.
Yep.
One of the less strict forms. That's a big one with us. And I think probably the most important one, usually on day one, is we explain that you have to express intent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So invariably, the first person who starts navigating the very first moment of the first day, okay, here's what I want you to do. And they put their finger on the board on the screen. Click here.
Yeah.
Okay, I type J, Q, M. That's right. Pick that one. Now click here. Now click here. This is a bad session.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Nobody knows what's going on. Everybody has to figure it out in retrospect. Nobody knows what the intent is. And this poor person is like, you're the worst UI I've ever seen. Like, I have to tell you to press the button instead of just pressing the button. So, to get people to express intent is hard. So when they say, listen, I think that we need to extract this body of code from 23 through 57, we should extract that to a new function.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So my thinking was, that function probably doesn't belong in this class. I was thinking maybe this class. Oh, was that? Oh, the other class? Yeah, that's a good place for it. Let's move it there.
Yeah.
You know, people are slow to get there, especially in their first mobbing sessions.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to want to control the keystroke and not the meta level of codecraft.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We actually talk a lot in our organization about, let's raise the level of navigation. Let's bring it up and don't over navigate. There are a lot of retrospectives where people are irritated because they're micro navigated, I guess.
Right.
And that's definitely like a long term thing that people have to work out over time, for sure.
Right. And people's the level of intent you use is different depending on how long they've been running the keyboard and they.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. And, you know, when the CFO is in, don't expect the CFO to necessarily know the keystroke for, you know, extract to variable or inline.
Right, right.
You kind of have to be more explicit. And, when it's somebody who's been there for a while, it's a little easier.
Yeah, nice. Well, we're coming up on our time. Oh, go ahead and finish. Oh. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, the only other thing I was going to say was we have a strict rule on not running away. And sometimes drivers run away.
Yes.
Okay.
They think, I've got the keyboard, now I'm programming. And in a flash, like a bunny, they're gone.
Nice.
They disappear down somewhere. We have to drag them back out. It's a lot of hard work. So the other tip is no running away.
No running away.
Yeah, for sure.
Overdriving or what do we call it?
Runaway driver.
Runaway driver. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Nice. Well, thanks for sharing those tips and tricks. I mean, there's a couple of them I'm going to walk away with and probably try today or tomorrow. So we greatly appreciate that. So we're hitting our time box. But before we close out completely, is there anything you like to share or plug about yourself?
About myself being at Industrial Logic, there's more than just me. So there is in Dallas coming up, there's a Modern Agile workshop. Mm-hmm. It's being run by two people I respect very much, Josh Karievsky and Ashley Johnson. If you have people in the Dallas area who can attend, definitely take a look. And of course, the Modern Agile community at modernagile.org. It is a community, it's not a brand or a company, it's a nonprofit, wide open. Come see what we're doing, learn, grow, share. It's what the community is all about.
Awesome. Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for being on the show. And to all our viewers out there, if you found something helpful in this episode that you think somebody else should see or hear about, please share it with them. I think that's the best way to kind of grow this content, grow the community, and have people learn about mobbing. So like, subscribe, and we will talk to you all later. Have a great one.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.